Welcome to the MS edition of Rare Disease Advisor's Rare Care Podcast, offering unique perspectives from researchers, clinicians, and influencers from the multiple sclerosis community.
Hello, this is Larry Luxner, Senior Correspondent for Rare Disease Advisor, reporting from the Consortium for Multiple Sclerosis Center's 2024 conference in Nashville, Tennessee. We have a special guest today on our Rare Care Podcast, Dr. Jacqueline Bainbridge, Professor and Vice Chair of Research in the Department of Clinical Pharmacy at the University of Colorado in Aurora. Originally from Ohio, Jackie received her pharmacy degree from Ohio Northern University and her doctorate from the University of Colorado. She then created a residency in neurology through the University of Colorado and partnered with the University of California, San Francisco, as well as the University of Wisconsin in Madison. The topic of our talk today is how medical cannabis can help patients with multiple sclerosis. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Hi, Larry. Great meeting you.
Okay, so we'll get right to the subject, which is MS and medical cannabis use. We understand that well over 1 million Americans have multiple sclerosis, and cannabis is increasingly accepted in a number of states. We now have 38 states which have authorized medical cannabis use, and another 24 which allow adult recreational use. Four states still forbid its use in any form, but at the same time, more and more people are using it in various forms, and it's becoming more and more accepted. How does this affect treatment for multiple sclerosis?
So specifically, when we're talking about treating disease states, it needs to be mentioned that cannabis is used to treat symptomatology. It's not curing disease states. So when we specifically are mentioning multiple sclerosis, we're talking about treating spasticity. And about 60 to 85% of patients with multiple sclerosis will suffer from spasticity.
Right. So nobody believes that by smoking or using edibles or in tinctures or some other form, they're going to treat or cure their disease. They're simply taking care of the pain, the spasticity, and the other effects that the disease causes, right?
Correct.
Okay. So I want to clarify that. I wanted to go specifically into the reasons why cannabis helps people with MS.
So cannabis helps patients with MS. We don't have a specific mechanism. There are proposed mechanisms, but specifically it relaxes the muscles that are producing the spasticity. Sometimes that can be painful and sometimes it's not painful.
Okay. And pain, of course, is a common feature of MS, right?
Yes.
The major reason people use cannabis in general, regardless of their disease, is to treat pain, and as well as other things like anxiety, insomnia, particularly migraines, back pain, that kind of thing.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. And it's, it's important to think about the specific cannabinoids that they're actually using to treat different conditions. So we know that THC will make insomnia worse because it creates a habitual pattern. We know that it will also make anxiety worse. So it needs to either be a blend or use a different cannabinoid such as CBD.
Right. And so the majority of people, when they talk about cannabis, specifically for medical use, we're talking about CBD as well as THC. But there are other endocannabinoids such as CBG, which could also be very useful in certain cases.
Correct. So those would be the major cannabinoids are of the plant. Are THC and CBD. They're most abundant. We know the most about them, but there are other minor cannabinoids in the plant as well, such as CBG. And we know that that blends well. We're suspecting that it blends well with CBD to help patients with other conditions such as restless leg syndrome.
Right. So I'd like to ask you specifically about your clinical trials that you either have done or have ongoing. One of them is specifically restless leg syndrome.
That is correct. That study will commence very soon, and we're looking at a blend of CBD and CBG to help those patients. So then in the past, I have done several clinical trials looking at CBD or CBD and THC versus placebo in patients with back pain.
How many people were involved in the will be involved in the restless leg syndrome? On trial?
From my recollection, we're looking at enrolling approximately 75 patients for that particular trial.
And that'll take place at the University of Colorado?
Correct.
Okay. So going back a bit, how much research has been done historically on the relationship between cannabis and MS?
So there's a good amount of clinical trials that have been done, specifically looking at spasticity in patients with multiple sclerosis. And what has been found is nabiximols or CBD in about a 1-to-1 blend with THC is the most efficacious. So nabiximols, we're talking about the GW formulation, the oral mucosal spray. Though that is also the same company that makes Epidiolex, which GW Pharmaceutics has been purchased by Jazz Pharmaceutics.
Right.
Pharmaceuticals.
Right. So, by the way, do you recommend that patients smoke cannabis, or is that not a recommended form of administration?
So, when you smoke cannabis, you actually create hazardous chemicals. So smoking is hazardous. So we recommend that patients vaporize the cannabis. And you get more consistent serum concentrations when you're vaporizing versus the oral administration, because 1 in 4 doses, even of the same preparation, when you're consuming cannabis orally, will produce a different effect.
That's an interesting point. So when you're vaping, it's a lot more controlled. The product is more controlled, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
And how do you get consistency with the product?
That's a very difficult thing, to get consistency. So we know that in Colorado, we have dispensaries on virtually like every other block. So it's really hard to get the same product twice. So it's difficult. So we recommend that patients utilize a reputable place where they can get the same product time after time after time. It's been tested for adulterants, chemicals, heavy metals, that sort of thing.
Okay. In general, the age of onset of multiple sclerosis, you said, can be anywhere from 20s to 50s, generally twice as much as likely to affect women as men.
Correct.
Right? Are there any special considerations for cannabis use among the elderly?
Absolutely. So when we're talking about patients of advanced age, we're talking about them consuming multiple products because they have the same thing everyone else has. So hypertension, they have thyroid disease, they have, you know, other medical conditions. So the more medications they're on, the more likelihood you're going to have a drug interaction with a product.
So you have to be careful that whatever is in the cannabis does not have negative consequences for whatever else they may be taking.
Absolutely.
Do patients generally tell you that they're using cannabis?
I think it's gotten much more likely with the legalization of cannabis in certain states. So I think practitioners are asking better questions, are more accepting of patients consuming cannabinoids. So patients feel more comfortable and they're talking to their physicians or practitioners, not just physicians, about their use of cannabis.
Very interesting. And in general, what about your personal experience researching cannabis? I know you've done some work with epilepsy, specifically Dravet syndrome, Lennox-Gastaut, and you mentioned one other rare epilepsy.
Tuberous sclerosis.
Okay. So you've researched all these diseases and how cannabis can help. And these are mainly pediatrics, right?
Yes, but they become adults. So the clinical trials, and we've looked at behavioral effects in patients with autism as well.
Oh, wow, that's interesting. Right. Is there any crossover? I mean, any relation to that, how it affects those kids mainly, and how it may benefit people with MS in later life?
I think just calming the system down. So working in conjunction with the endocannabinoid system, so what we have in our body, it's working towards homeostasis.
Right. And I want to ask you one thing very important before we wrap up, and that is the danger of cannabis addiction. I know a small percentage of users do become addicted, and yet the danger and the reason that it's been illegal for so many years is because it was seen to be dangerously addictive. Now, we know that most people who use cannabis are not addicted, right? And it does have beneficial effects. I want to ask you how the likelihood of a rescheduling of cannabis will affect your research and what you do and the general acceptance of medical marijuana.
I think that if cannabis is rescheduled to a Schedule 3, it will make our research projects easier because we have a lot of hoops to go through at university levels that have federal funding. So it will definitely make clinical trials more plentiful and easier to do. I'm not sure it's how it's going to work with rescheduling in terms of potency. So in Colorado, we have some products when you talk about doing dabs and shatter and that are very high in THC concentrations. So that's where you really get into trouble with addiction and habitual use. So I'm not sure how that's going to be handled under that rescheduling.
Time will tell. We don't even know if it will be rescheduled. This is an election year.
Yes.
A lot can happen, but it looks like it probably will because it seems that almost everybody is on board now, right?
Many people are on board now.
Right. Okay. We've been talking with Dr. Jacqueline Bainbridge, Professor and Vice Chair of Research at the Department of Clinical Pharmacy, the University of Colorado in Aurora. Thank you so much for talking with us. This is Larry Luxner for Rare Disease Advisor.
Be sure to follow the latest news, perspectives, and clinical resources on rare diseases at rarediseaseadvisor.com. Thank you for listening.